You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405. We have a great conversation up today with Anthony Constantino, who's created a dynamic company in, of all spaces, printing. And I want Anthony to tell you about it so that you really get a sense of what these guys have done over the last 8 to 9 years and the impact that they're making, not only in the printing industry, but the impact they're making in their particular town. So, Anthony, welcome to the show.
Awesome. Thanks. Well, happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit, Anthony, about the company.
Cool. So Sticker Mill started in, I think, April 2010, and over the past 8 or 9 years or so that we've been in business, we've somehow managed to growing companies on the internet, period. And we like to say the internet's favorite printing company. And it really all happened due to our obsession with simplicity and taking a process that was previously very, very time consuming. I believe at the time we started, it took, you know, a few hours to order stickers spread out across a number of days because there would be back and forth between the customer and then the provider of the product. And we shrunk that down to something that people can do in 30 seconds. And in doing so, really exploded the market, because when something takes 4 hours to do, a lot of people shy away from ordering. But when something takes 30 seconds, all of a sudden people are ordering stickers that are cats and dogs and girlfriends and boyfriends and whatever else comes to mind.
That's great. So as you grew this company, what were some of the successes that you found along the way? What were some of the great successes that you could really celebrate?
I mean, really, like, the number one success for me has been just to see the growth of the company and all the people we've been able to bring on board as a result of growing the business. That's been the most exciting thing for me. We have a tremendous team that we started in a small town in upstate New York, and over the course of the last 8 years, we've managed to bring people on board that work out of 16 different countries. We have offices in two places in the United States and manufacturing in the United States and Italy. And just to see the growth and the impact that the business has had locally and also the growth internationally has been really exciting.
Well, how did you come about doing that? I mean, was this all growth all planned before you started?
A lot of things that happened to us happened serendipitously. I think from day one, we were committed. We were convinced we were going to be successful. The whole business started as a conversation with me and my co-founder, who was just about to turn 70, or was just under 70, maybe 68, 69. And he had managed to get through his entire career without even using a computer. And he had just purchased one for the first time in his life. He sat down with me and he wanted my advice on, you know, how to navigate the computer. And I started just casually BSing about the idea of bringing manufacturing online. And he said, well, what do people do when they go online? How would that work? And I showed him a company called Zazzle, which is still around and still very successful. And he said, okay, that's great. And he left and said goodnight. And then I thought nothing would come to the conversation, but he came and saw me the very next morning and said, I thought about what you showed me, and we need to start a internet manufacturing company together. That was really the genesis of how we got started. And I think that was a serendipitous conversation. But I remember going back to him and saying, you know, it's exciting that you came back to me so quickly, but are you sure we really can do this? And his response was, you know, I've never failed at anything in my life, and I've never seen you fail at anything either. And I think if we do this together, we won't fail at this either, even though most businesses do fail. I think 95% failure rate on new businesses. But he was like, you know, we're not going to fail, but we've always embraced serendipity.
That's amazing. That is really amazing, Anthony. So is he still part of the business?
Me and him are still great friends. And, you know, he never joined the business in a full-time sense. I mean, we always been friends, and we hang out and talk about things. He's been a tremendous advisor for me, and probably easily my strongest mentor in my life. But when we first started, I think there was a 3 to 6 month period where he did answer phone calls from customers that would come in, because we didn't have anyone to do that. And, you know, he was doing it for a period of time. But outside of that, he really been acted as an advisor to me.
So now, when he said we have to bring manufacturing online, talk to me about that. I mean, he's not actually manufacturing online.
Well, me and him, he worked his whole career in manufacturing. And at that point, I was 28. I had worked my entire life in manufacturing. And I'm from a small manufacturing town. and the frustration that me and him both shared in manufacturing was that we had no control. Like, manufacturers traditionally sold through distributors, and we use salespeople to acquire the distributors. So we were very far removed from the end customer. So sometimes a salesperson would land a big distribution partner and they would have all sorts of requirements. You have to scale up really quickly, and that could be frustrating. And at the same time, sometimes you could lose a distribution partner. You'd have to scale down really quickly, which means laying people off. And that was also very frustrating. So through both of our careers, we both kind of had this internal desire to control more than just the factories, because it's just not a pleasant situation to be in. It's hard to get people aligned with the interest of the company when the workers in the factory feel like they could lose their jobs at any moment, or get put under overtime pressure at any moment for something that's really outside of everyone's control. So we both just had this idea to control the entire experience and control and be more connected to the customer. And that's really what drove us to want to bring manufacturing alive online. And that was the genesis of that.
Like, okay. All right. So you brought the sales aspect online. Is that right?
Yeah. We do have salespeople now. We have tremendous salespeople at Sticker Mule. We have a tremendous sales team. But, you know, in the beginning, we like the idea of just connecting manufacturing directly with the customers via a website where people could just come and buy, and we gave them a great experience back with outstanding customers. But we didn't want to be out in the world. We lived in a world where to win customers, salespeople had to wine and dine people, and we just didn't want to be in that world, because we wanted to win customers because the service was good, not because a particular salesperson was more effective at entertaining than another one.
So, I mean, you've really created an opportunity for somebody to purchase what they wanted, rather than a salesperson going out and trying to convince them that they need what
exactly.
All right.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Well, go ahead.
Even in our marketing, you know, there's the idea of being persuasive in your marketing, and we never wanted to persuade people. We just wanted, even through marketing, we don't really use persuasion tactics. We use.
So you brought sales online for manufacturing, and that allowed people who had something that they wanted to get what they wanted, rather than have salespeople in your company to go out and try to convince people to buy something that they may or may not want.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, we've never been big believers in wanting to persuade people. We want to deal with people that genuinely want our product, and we want to make it as easy as possible for them. And there's plenty of people in the world that do want our products and do want our, you know, do what we want, what we offer. And there's other businesses in the world that use persuasion to try to convince people to buy. And we just thought there was enough people in the world that have a legitimate need for the product that it wasn't necessary to think about, you know, using persuasion tactics or anything like that. We just really want to make it easy for people.
All right. So now, when you said that one of the things that frustrated you in manufacturing is that you were not in control, and that when demand went down, the manufacturer would have to lay off his workers, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, me and my co-founder both live in that world.
So how did you fix that problem?
You know, the idea was previously in the world we lived in is we lived and died by our distribution partners and by our salespeople ability to acquire distribution partners. And by having a service that where we were connected directly to the customer, we really lived and died by our own ability to service the customer and by our own ability to make it, you know, make it easy for the customer to purchase. So it was totally in our hands. Like, maybe we're control freaks, but we were able to control everything. And if sales went down, it became our fault for not servicing people correctly or not marketing correctly, rather than, geez, I mean, I had situations where distribution partners just went bankrupt. And what can you do? I didn't want to be in that world.
So what you did was you took over the whole sales and distribution aspect.
And the manufacturing and connected everything.
Well, then you guys had to become very, very good at marketing, right?
That is true, and that's interesting. I had no background in marketing prior to this, and I do remember living in a world where marketing people traditionally earn more than manufacturing people and wondering why. And people in manufacturing tend to be very prideful of, you know, the factory and how good it is, and they think people should just come to them because they have a great factory. But, you know, going through this process, you know, I did learn how important marketing is, because without effective marketing tactics, it doesn't matter. You go to the best factory in the world, it doesn't matter. And in fact, in the beginning, when we started, we, you know, admittedly did not have the best factory in the world. We didn't even realize it at the time, but we had problems in the factory that caused us to provide us the substandard product for a period of time, but the marketing was good.
Right.
And the marketing was able to overcome that, and they gave, you know, we started learning about our defects and we fixed them. And
because you had a close relationship with your customers, and then at the same time you were in charge of the manufacturing, you could pick up those defects, and they weren't problems so much as they were opportunities to solve, right?
Exactly. We wanted to align everyone, you know, customers and factory workers. And when you're not directly connected and you're hearing things through word of mouth, you don't know exactly what the person cares about. But for the first 2 or 3 years, in addition to overseeing the factory, I did the majority of the customer service. In fact, we had only one customer service person for the first 3 years, other than myself. But that was a tremendous way for me to really understand what people care about and fix the things that people care about.
But, right.
Yeah.
Well, now, would you say that your leadership team right now is fully aligned? I mean, do they all know where the company's going and how it's going to get there?
Yeah, I say we have a very simple strategy. People ask me what our strategy is, and I say it's simply, we want to get better every day. And my co-founder used to say, in business, you do two things: you increase revenue and you decrease costs. And I say, I have my own take on that. I say you do two things: you find problems and you fix them. So generally, we stay very focused on making sure our growth rate stays positive. But the way we keep it positive is by constantly searching for problems and resolving problems. And we look for problems across the entire company now. We have, you know, various departments: customer service, manufacturing, marketing, and we're all just constantly in search of problems. There's no grandiose strategy. Just fix problems, make people happier.
You probably have a list of all of your issues then, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I manage via list, you know, now we all generally manage via lists. It's, you know, right. Write your things, right. Make your list and cross things off. And that's really all you got to do.
And so would you say that that's true of everybody in the company, that everybody is comfortable announcing, speaking, adding to the list? These are problems that are getting in the way. These are obstacles. We want to solve them. Would you say that everybody's comfortable adding to that list?
Oh yeah, I think it's one of our strengths and why we've been so successful, is we kind of ingrained that attitude in the business from day one, that we manage via lists, and we use an amazing tool called Asana. Mm-hmm. We use a variety of tools over the years, but we use a tool now called Asana, which is just group task management. They've done a tremendous job building out the product. And you know, I attribute a lot of our success to getting people on board with that concept from day one. So when new people come in, they just kind of automatically join our way of doing things.
Right. Good. Now, well, when you talk about people joining, you said that you'd hired a number of people from the local area. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we go ahead.
Oh, no. Go ahead.
Well, we're headquartered in a small town in upstate New York that was hit hard. During my lifetime, I saw, I think, almost half the population leave, and it's a lot of abandoned buildings. I think almost every factory, I believe almost every factory other than, I think there's one other than ours that's still there. A tremendous number of manufacturers left. So we're headquartered there. Our manufacturing is all there. And it's been really exciting to grow there. But really to build the company to where we are, we had the idea that we want to get the best people no matter where they are in the world. So it's been exciting seeing the impact of Sticker Mill in my hometown. But it's equally been exciting bringing in people from all over the place. I think we have people in 16 different countries now. And even though we're across a lot of different cultures, it's amazing when we get together and people just seem to instantly get along.
How many people do you have in the total company?
So we've never disclosed that.
We
kept that like, you know, secret. It's definitely over 100.
Okay.
But we've never disclosed that exactly.
All right, and you have them in 16 countries now.
Yeah.
Say you get good people. What does that mean?
That's a good question. For us, I think I didn't know what it meant when you talk about culture, and I saw other CEOs. I remember listening to the CEO actually at Airbnb that said he mainly at a point in his career was mainly thinking about culture. And I was like, what are these people talking about? But I realized later when you hit scale, culture becomes really important, because you can't interact one-on-one with people. You kind of have to have guiding principles that you care about. So we created five values that we look for in everyone we hire. And during the hiring process, the people that do the interviewing are kind of trained to make their best guess whether people adhere to these values and try to recite them from top of mind. But the number one most important thing for us is humility, because without that, it's just, I think everything's difficult without that. It's very difficult to improve without humility. And there are businesses that run with people that have stronger egos than we have at Sticker Mill, but I find it a lot easier to run a company full of humble people, because if you're modest about your skills, you can always improve. Like a lot of the people that work here, I have conversations with them and they're constantly, in a way, almost self-doubting themselves and thinking that they're not that good. But I think that attitude is what makes people good, because if you're always wondering where your deficiencies are, always improving. And if you're coming to work saying, I'm amazing, I'm already amazing, then, you know, you're kind of stuck. You've already decided you're amazing. There's nothing to improve. So I think that's the number one thing when I say we look for amazing people. We look for modest people that are humble. And
humility is number one. Humility is the first mm-hmm. one. I want to hear all five of your core values.
All five. We look for people that are independent. We have a remote culture. So if you join us, you have to be able to, you know, we talked about managing things via lists. You have to be able to look for your own things to work on. I mean, we tend to start people with, we tend to hire when the queue of stuff to do builds to a point where a new hire makes sense. Mm-hmm. So people have things to work on day one, but once they get acclimated, we're relying on people being able to hunt for their own things to do and their ability to build their own list and keep themselves busy.
Okay. Humility, independent.
Independence. We look for autodidactic, so self-taught. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was in college, my first year of college, I got a C in a class, and I was devastated that I got a C because it screwed up my GPA, and I went to one of my professors, and I said, do you think I should take this over in the summer and clean up my GPA? And he said, you know, if you really care so much about that class, what you should do is grab the textbook over the summer and teach it to yourself. Don't worry about the grades, because the most important thing you're going to learn in college is the ability to learn. Because once you're done here, you're going to have to keep learning, especially if you want to get in business and really progress in business. Uh-huh. You're going to constantly have to be able to teach yourself. So,
all right.
Yeah, that's very important. Now you're putting me on the spot. I don't know if I have these all memorized.
Oh, okay. So humility, independent, yeah. Autodidactic, self-taught.
Those are the ones at the top of mind for me. I'm sure there's some other ones. Okay. we'll leave it at that.
Well, that's good. All right. So the first thing in my business, that would mm-hmm. be called the right person. If they fit the values, they're the right person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to put it.
Now, once you have that, for us, what we want to know is, do they get what this job is, this particular responsibility, this role that we're asking them? Do they know how that fits into the whole company, how it helps us get our vision? Do they get it? Mm-hmm. Number two, do they want it? Do they want to be in this spot? Now, not just to get a paycheck. Are they bouncing out of bed in the morning to come and do this, take on this role?
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, do they have the capacity for it?
Yep.
Are they capable of doing it? We call it GWC.
That's a good way to think about it. I think the way we resolve some of those, we're a big believer in strong and well-written job descriptions. Mm-hmm. I like to be obsessive about job descriptions. And I think that solves a big chunk of helping the person understand why they're here. You know, mm-hmm. if you have people actually come here, they tend to love our job descriptions because we get a lot of compliments on them.
Good.
If you look at other places and you read job descriptions, like sometimes you're like, what are these people hiring for? I mean, there's the title and there's a vague thing, but it's
very
confusing. You're like, what are these people hiring for? But we try to be as concrete as possible. We have very concise job descriptions and we back every job description with concrete metrics. So here's what you're going to be doing and here's the metric you're going to be targeted on improving.
Right. Because that's the data part. All right. Yep. We look at vision, which has to, begins with our core values, and then where are we going? What's our, what are we doing here? And then what's our target? Our 10 year, 30 year, 25 year? What's the big thing we're aiming at? And then we want to get the right people in the right seat. Right people, they got our values. Right seat mm-hmm. means they GWC it. They get it, they want it, and they have the capacity, the capability. And then I love what you're saying about everybody has a metric, because that's what we're going to measure on the weekly scorecard at various various levels in the organization. But ultimately, everybody has at least one measurable.
Exactly. It's key. It's key to making people able to self-manage, enabling people to self-manage.
Yeah. And we use the core values, and we use the GWC to hire, to fire, to manage, to celebrate, to find good, you know, people doing the right things, and review them. And that key there to me is, I mean, that's what I hear you talking about. That's going to make the company a lot stronger. It's also going to help the people feel very confident, because they know what they're going to be reviewed on.
Yeah, sounds like we got a lot of ideas in common. Different words, same ideas.
Yeah.
And I've seen in general that there's a pattern for these things. You know, successful companies, they use different words for the same ideas, but
You
know, a lot of them have these similar concepts in mind.
I'll send you a copy of copy of the book called Traction.
I love that, yeah.
I'll send it to you. You said that you have the list. Now, I'm curious with these, especially when you've got over 16 different countries. Mm-hmm. So you've got the list. You got issues. How do you solve those issues as a leadership team? What's the process?
I tell people to start with problems before jumping to solutions. I remember, like, earlier in my career, I think a lot of people talk about solutions or features. Like, it'd be great if the company could do this, or it'd be great if we could do this, it'd be great if we could do that, but without thinking about what they're solving. So I encourage people to start with problems, and then we collectively think about how to resolve those problems. So we use Asana, which lets us discuss things, but we like to start with identifying problems, and then just we collectively put our heads together. I think we all know each other well enough that we kind of know who to grab that would be relevant for solving a particular problem. I mean, we're doing well, but we're still small enough that we know each other pretty well. So if we have a manufacturing problem, it's just it's intuitive. These would be the people you'd get together with to resolve that. If it's a customer service problem, these would be the people you'd get together with to resolve that. But I think anyone can identify problems. So I encourage people to start there. It's a lot harder to come up with solutions, and we like that to be a more collaborative problem.
What I've discovered in many companies is when they have a problem, sometimes the leaders get together and just start talking, which is not very effective. What I've also seen is oftentimes they'll get together and they will effectively solve a problem, but it's not the real problem. It's just a symptom of the real problem.
Yeah.
Does that ever happen with you?
I think we've effectively trained people for the most part to avoid chasing down symptoms and get to the root of things. I mean, I think we've effectively avoided that. I mean, I have seen that myself earlier, but the nice thing about Sticker Mill for myself and for my co-founder is, you know, previously, you know, we both worked for companies that exist already. We never created a company before. So we both got to see things we liked and didn't like and didn't work. And knowing that, like I said, my co-founder said, this is going to succeed. I've never failed at anything. We had the attitude that we were going to succeed from day one. And so we wanted to build a good foundation from day one and avoid a lot of the things that go wrong in companies from day one.
Right. Well, that's wonderful, because what we call our issue solving track, where what we do is we ask people to use the discipline we call IDS. Mm-hmm. And that means, number one, first we want to identify the real problem. Get down there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to dig down and challenge each other that's not the real problem. This is the real problem. And once we discover the real problem, everybody in the leadership team or the people working on the problem, they all agree this is the real problem. Mm-hmm. Then we want to discuss it. Now, in my experience, people often start discussing. And they'll discuss it and discuss it and discuss it and discuss the heck out of it until they run out of time and they don't solve it.
Yeah.
And so the discipline, which when I found out about this, I was just blown away. The discipline is, once you put a solution on the table, you can only talk about it that one time.
Mm-hmm.
Others can talk about it, but you can't, because if you talk about it the second time, you are probably trying to convince people that your way is right, which is politicking.
Yeah.
And it's not about winning or losing. It's not about power. It's not about me. It's about what's the best solution in the best interest of this company on the way to our vision. And if it's the right one, everybody's going to recognize it. If it's not, arguing about it is not going to produce the right solution.
I'm no fan of meetings, long, especially long ones.
Yeah, well, once we've identified the real problem, everybody has a chance to put their solution, ask others about questions about it. But once you get all the potential solutions on the table, then you pick one. That's what solution is you pick one and you go out and you try it. Somebody takes the responsibility for doing it, and next week we get a report on it.
Exactly. It's speed kills.
Yes. Now, you have a number of processes, don't you? And if you've gotten – now, when you have 16 countries, you said you had manufacturing, what, in Italy?
And we have manufacturing in Italy and in the United States.
All right. What are these other – when you have 16 countries, what are the roles?
Why do we have people in 16 countries? To build out – you know, so the main things that we do outside of manufacturing are customer service, software development, and marketing. And we wanted to get the best people that we could. So when we started looking, particularly for software developers, we have some international coverage for marketing, but particularly for software developers and marketing people, we went and got them wherever they were, whether they're in Europe or South America. We didn't stress out.
So when you start thinking about things like customer service, delivery, returns, accounting, HR, you have processes for that, right?
Yeah.
Do you have them documented, written down?
You know, I thought, you know, that's easier said than done. And it's like in a company, documenting processes, for me, it's like one of those things that sounds good on paper, but it's hard. Do we have some amount of documentation, but processes tend to change and you can add a lot of overhead documenting them. Like for me, if the process is so intuitive, it should just be natural that people should understand how to do it.
Do you find that's true?
We haven't had it. Yeah. I found that true in our experience.
Uh-huh. I'm not talking about, a 700 page SOP manual. I'm talking about taking one or two pages at the most and documenting the process. 7 to 10 processes in a company, and then making sure that we have those 7 to 10 documented so that if somebody had to come in and take over, it's all right there. You don't have to redo it, and we don't have to train them for 6 months. It's all right there. Just follow the process.
Yeah, I think it depends on, for us, the complexity of the process and whether it's something that's going to be around for a while or something that's more prone to change. So in manufacturing, some of the more complex processes that we have documented, but I do like documentation because I said the more complex processes are documented. A nice thing is if you see a process as complex, it's an opportunity to simplify. So for me, like in an ideal world, I remember I was a kid, I played video games and I would I never wanted to read the manual. And I got this idea in my mind that like if things are designed well, you shouldn't need a manual. So,
right.
Yeah.
I wrote user's guides for Toshiba for 4 years, mid 90s. And of all the things that I do when I get a new computer, I don't read the manual.
Yeah.
Now, you guys ever hit the ceiling? I mean, you get to the place where you just don't know what to do next. You keep trying and it doesn't solve it.
Wouldn't say we haven't hit that yet. one day it's coming, but you know, we've been around 8 years and we haven't hit that yet. I mean, I can't even say there's really been lull so far. Mm-hmm. There's been a brief time where, growth has temporarily slowed and then we just reevaluate really what our marketing strategy is. And
Right.
And we make changes.
Exactly.
But we never hit a terrible point in that regard.
Well, I'm not talking about terrible. I'm just talking about that place where your growth is, you're trying to do it and it's not easy right now. We got to do something different because what I have found is the five things that are all foundational for a strong company is when we hit the ceiling, and this means that everybody on the leadership team understands this so they can share it together. Number one, simplify it. Mm-hmm. What's the problem here? Make it as simple, dumb it down so that anybody could understand it. So mm-hmm. simplify, and then the next thing is delegate it. Mm-hmm. Somebody takes responsibility for the solution that we come up with. Delegate it. Mm-hmm. After that, begin to improve our ability to predict. Mm-hmm. So that we can predict what's going to happen. And as we're practicing that, we may not be that good at predicting, but the more we depend upon it and measure it, even over a longer period, 90 days or more, the better we are at prediction, the more coordinated we're going to be in the effort to achieve the solution. So simplify, delegate, predict, and then systemize it. Once mm-hmm. we know it's working, obviously in manufacturing, you got to have systems to make it work. And the same thing is true of every other part of business. The more you can systemize it, the better you're going to be, because you're going to be picking out the best and most effective process for doing it. And then you get everybody to use it.
Yeah, and for sure.
The fifth thing is structure. So when you get the structure there, that's when you're going to get the right people in the right seats.
I'm lucky I got a manufacturing background, so a lot of this came natural to me.
That's wonderful. That is just tremendous.
Yeah, manufacturing is all about systems, so it just is part of my nature.
Well, so I'm curious. I'd like to ask you, what kind of impact you've had on your town there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's been the most exciting thing for me recently, and it's exciting for two reasons. One is, if you go back 2 years in our history, people were actually in the organization were getting frustrated with the idea of operating in our hometown, because we were having a hard time finding people. Unfortunately, I have a town that shrunk in size quite a bit. I think we lost half people that were there during my lifetime, and the population was still slightly declining for the past 2 years. So it wasn't easy for us to find people. And I thought about, why that might be. And I realized that we had been spending tremendous amount of time and effort marketing Sticker Mule internationally, but we hadn't been spending any time marketing Sticker Mule to the local community for the purpose of hiring. Mm-hmm. And so about 2 years ago, I dove into that, and I said, everyone has marketing strategies for getting sales, but at a certain point, you need marketing strategies for getting people. So we put together a pretty aggressive we built a team around the idea of marketing to the local community and getting the word about us in the local community. And in doing so, we completely alleviated the problem with hiring. It turns out that there's a tremendous number of highly talented people, even in our hometown. They weren't coming and applying because they didn't even know we were here. But mm-hmm. we've completely alleviated that problem. We've been able to provide a lot of jobs in our hometown, and we're the number one employer now in my hometown. And there's really no end in sight for us. So it's really exciting to see. Mm-hmm. To me, the impact that we're going to end up having on the community in the long term. Like, if you look at what other states are doing or the situation with Amazon, I mean, New York was fighting to have Amazon, and we're nowhere near the size of Amazon, but for a small town with just 15,000 people, we really have an opportunity to do a lot to rejuvenate the city or the town that I grew up in.
Yeah. Well, what do you see, without revealing your great strategic plan for the next 50 years, mm-hmm. what do you see coming up in the immediate future for Sticker Mule?
Well, the nice thing about us, you mentioned keeping things simple or simplifying in order to manage growth. And I think one thing we've done has been pretty smart is we've kept Sticker Mule pretty simple. It's not hard to understand, who we are. We got 7 product lines, and all we do is market our product lines to an ever number growing of people. So the whole strategy in front of us is, like my co-founder said, in business you do 2 things, you bring down costs and you increase revenue. So by fixing problems in the organization, we're constantly bringing down costs and making the organization easier to scale. And then at the same time, we're searching for ways to put Sticker Mule in front of more people. And, we don't share too many metrics, but some things are public here. You can go find them out for yourself. We just hit 1 million unique visitors for the first time in 1 month in February. So it's pretty exciting to think, 1 million people thought about Sticker Mule in the month of February. 8 years ago, I never would have thought that would have happened. I thought we would have been successful, but that's a lot of eyeballs on you.
Excellent. Well, what would be success for you? What do you want to get out of Sticker Mule?
Success for me would be, I said in the beginning, I wanted to provide the best place to work and shop. And so success for me would be to continue growing the company while maintaining the culture and have keep people continue saying this is an outstanding place to work. A lot of people that join us leave other jobs or other careers to come join us. And a tremendous number of them said it's just the best decision they ever made. And Sticker Mule is the best employer they've ever worked for. And that's easy to achieve when you're small. It gets harder as you grow, but we're still achieving that. And hopefully, you know, 10 years from now, we'll still be achieving that. So that would be success for me.
One of my clients is in Ohio, and I was working with them remotely last week. And part of what we do is we ask the question, what are you doing? What's your purpose? What's your purpose, your cause, your passion? What's that about? And I was blown away by their answer.
Oh, yeah. What did they say?
This is an ESOP, right? The employee mm-hmm. stock-owned company. They mm-hmm. said, our purpose is to make certain that every one of our members retires comfortably.
That's wonderful.
Isn't that astounding? I thought that's just amazing. Just amazing. Wow.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful goal.
Well, I just got on your website, and Jen reached out in chat, and I said that I was interviewing their CEO on the radio right now. I was wondering, is this a good place to work? And she says, thanks for reaching out. We have factories in upstate New York and Italy, and our support teams work remotely across the globe, and yes, it is absolutely a great place to work.
It's a great answer.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Listen, this has been very inspiring, Anthony. Very inspiring. Like I said, I'm going to send you a copy of Traction, and maybe we can have a conversation about it in a couple of weeks.
That'd be great. I look forward to reading it.
So do I send it to 336 Forest Avenue?
Yep.
I will do that. Perfect. Anything else you'd like to say before we finish?
No, I think this was great. I really appreciate you getting me on, and you did a great job. It was a wonderful conversation.
That's very good. My goal is to have 5 great conversations a day, and you are number 5.
Thank you.
All right. Well, my daughter lives in Albany, and we get mm-hmm. up there frequently. We'll be in Albany in New England in July.
Oh, okay.
And maybe we can get a chance to get together
grab a coffee,
and break some bread.
Go to Uncommon Grounds or something. I don't know if you know that place.
What's that?
Out there. I used to go to Uncommon Grounds all the time. Uncommon Grounds, I don't know if you know it.
No, where is that?
It's just on Western Avenue.
Oh, really? On Common Grounds.
Coffee and bagels and salads.
Oh, nice. I once helped produce a movie called On Common Ground. Excellent. All right. Well, super. You want to ask people to take a look at Sticker Mule?
Yeah, it'd be great. I'd say come on, check us out, stickermule.com, and also follow us on Twitter. We have a super fun, I think one of the most active brands on Twitter, and it's a lot of fun. Check us out there too.
Well, there's only one brand that's more active on Twitter than you then, right?
Yeah, maybe Nike.
I was thinking of somebody in the White House.
Oh, that one too.
All right. Well, have a good time, my friend, and we'll look forward to seeing you. And it's been great.
Great. Thanks, Will.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.